Welcome to the Casey Catch-Up. Now, super stoked to have Mizzo Fernando on for this episode. It was really cool to have a chat with him. He's actually someone that I've really admired. His social media clips are always really good. You know, and I feel like, especially recently, Sup Foiling, he's done some epic clips. So, yeah, stoked to have Mizzo on. It was cool to have our coaching points align. So we both had really similar views on how to coach people and what was important when learning. Because of this, and after chatting more with Mizzo, I've actually asked him to come on as a Coach Casey Club coach, which is super exciting. It means help me with my weekly Talkback Tuesdays. Going to be giving input for the Facebook group. And basically, I'm just going to be able to communicate with him more, and we'll be able to share notes. Might even be able to get over to Brazil or South America and do a few sort of coaching clinics, camps, retreats with him, which is super exciting. You know, I look forward to sort of building that relationship with Mizzo. Because it seemed like we were similar, and then I look forward to growing that relationship with him. But yeah, won't blabble on too much. The Casey Catch-Up with Mizzo, we go through how he learnt. We also go through the epic downwind locations in Brazil. He runs us through a 300-kilometre epic adventure he did with one of his friends. And we also go through injuries and how injuries can actually basically help you grow as a person, which is anyway, super, super cool. But yeah, thanks everyone for following along, and make sure you check out the Coach Casey Club. And yeah, see you for the next episode soon. Got a couple lined up. Cheers, guys. All right, welcome to the Casey Catch-Up. We got Mizzo from Brazil, and I've been admiring Mizzo's surf style for, I don't know, at least probably 4 or 5 years, and really pushing the boundary in SUP foil surfing, I think, and also downwind foils. Mizzo, welcome to the podcast. Stoked to have you on. It's been good to watch. What's your, I don't feel like it was a progression. You were just ripping from the start.
Yeah, man. Thanks. Thanks for having me here. It's I feel honored. Well, I've been doing the foiling thing for, I think, 5 or 6 years. I don't know. Maybe between 2017, 2018, when I started. And man, it's like everyone that foils know the feeling. It's hard to go back into regular surfing. Well, actually, once in a while, I feel like I need to go back into regular surfing just because it's the roots of everything. It's where I started. But man, with foiling, day after day, more variables of foiling. And there's so much to explore, you know. You cannot stop once you started, because the playground just gets broader and broader. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's actually something you just touched on then. The different variables within foiling are definitely a lot bigger than the variables within surfing. Because obviously surfing, you know, there's longboard, there's shortboard, there's mid-lengths, there's twin fins, quads, thrusters, but they're all like more or less
just riding a single wind.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas foiling, there's wing foiling, there's downwind foiling, you know, there's prone foiling, SUP foiling, and there's like, that you're able to use those in such a variety of conditions, you know, and to like, obviously downwind foiling is like my greatest passion. It opens up, it's like the backcountry of surfing, you know? So, I know we were talking a little bit before, but explain, I guess, you know, your downwind foil journey and, everything, you know. I want to hear why, because most of your clips are surf foil clips, but, you know, explain why that is.
Well, where I live, it's not really a downwind foil place. It's actually good for surfing, and my home break is actually, wow, the wave is a jewel for surf foiling. And actually for prone is not so good because there's so much water moving, so much current, and you have to paddle a lot. And then if you go prone foiling, you're gonna spend more time actually paddling, laying down on the board, than actually catching waves. Once you catch a wave, then you're gonna be riding for at least a minute. But if you have a SUP, it's a lot better because you're not a victim on the current. You know, you can deal with the current. It's much easier. And actually, you're standing up and then you get to see the lineup better. So I like to do sub foiling a lot there. and sometimes towing. But it's not, like I said, the where I live is not really a downwind. But the northeast of Brazil, it's really special. There are, well, I think we have over 1,500 kilometers of different routes with side onshore winds. So you just have to really choose a place, draw out the route and go for it. You know, you can travel the whole coast of the northeast of Brazil doing downwinders. Is insane.
Ooh, epic.
So
I've been to not that far north, but I think it's Maceió.
Maceió?
Yeah. Is that far enough north or is it further north?
It's, well, from the northeast, I think it's the furthest down. For sure, there are downwinders there, but the wind is not as strong as you go up along the northeast coast towards the equator line.
Mm-hmm.
You're more on the bottom, so the trade winds are more onshore. As you go up north towards Ceará, then the trade winds, it runs sideways along the coast.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, really good. And the trade winds, it really accelerates once the winds find the coastline, because it goes parallel to the coastline.
Mm-hmm.
So you get all this temperature from all the heat from the land, and then the side wind just, you know, go really strong.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really special going up there, man.
Yeah. Sounds like a wind sports paradise. And I want to go back to, you know, just the thing you're talking about, your local spot, how you're preferring the subfoil to pronafoil. And I think that's been, I've seen a bit of that locally here in Australia, where there's, you know, spots that are, you know, great pronafoil waves when it's a little bit small, or the conditions aren't quite right, the tide's too high, people go out in their subfoils, and because of the whole downwind sort of I guess explosion, you know, downwind foiling has exploded in the last sort of 2 years, that the guys that are downwind foiling originally only like the subs for downwind and they proned, but now it's kind of doing a reversal, like the downwind guys, well, because they've learnt the downwind on the sup, they're now going into the surf on their subs, because exactly what you said, the currents, the ability to see, and you can just catch more waves. You know, it's as simple as that.
We'll catch many more waves. And I think everybody's moving to sub-foiling surf because they're getting used to it, the paddle. I think everybody wants to go downwinding, but paddling, it's something really tricky. I used to paddle a lot before I started foiling. I had my 14-foot sub paddleboard, so I knew how to paddle before I started foiling. Mm-hmm. And that's why when I got into foiling, I actually started on the sub, because I already used with the paddle. So once you get used to the paddle, man, it's a great device. You know, it's amazing. Yeah. And you can still rip. You can still perform just as you were on a prone board. You know, the length of the board doesn't bother at all. So that's why I think people are getting more into, after they go into downwinders, they will prefer actually to catch waves on the sub, especially in these hard conditions to prone paddle.
Yeah, and I think that's like that last line, like especially in the hard conditions. I think there's still a place. Like I still love my prone foiling when the conditions are good for it. I think the biggest thing I have with the sup and the surf is because the board's longer, I guess like you could use shorter boards, but yeah, you know, no matter what, you're not using a 5 foot SUP generally. The tail sometimes gets caught when you're going across the wave. And I feel like that, like when you're going like sort of deeper in the pocket and you're going along, and if the wave hits the tail, it'll sort of spin you out. That's the only time I don't like the sup. Otherwise, like white water hits, I saw you do some sick, like an awesome air on the SUP. I think it actually is easier on the sup because the extra surface area for the landing in white water hits and landing on airs, it's like, and the paddle to lean on, you know?
Exactly. And the paddle helps a lot. And well, the length of the board, sometimes it bothers, but actually, just like you mentioned, sometimes it helps.
Yes.
But I think, well, back in the day, I used to have a custom sub board from F1, which was a 510. by 23 inches wide at 85 liters. It was amazing. The board was really maneuverable, but it was too wide. But then I got used to the downwind boards for sup fighting in waves. And now I think I'm going to come up with a new design, you know, because, you know, it's part of the deal. You try different stuff and then you want to develop something new. So I think now I'm going to try just like these mid-length wing foil boards from F1 they have.
Yeah.
Which is a smaller version of the sub downwing boards. I think that would fit really well. Well, I'm a very short guy. You know, I'm 165 centimeters at 65 kilos. So the downwind boards are actually really, really big for me.
Yeah. You know, it'd be hard for you to find a production downwind board that's the right volume. You'd be over-volumed all the time, huh?
No, actually, no. F1 has this 70 by 18 inches wide, which is 86 liters. This suits me really well.
Yeah.
It could be a little bit narrower. Now they have the 17 inches. I think 17 inches will be fine. So not so much on the downwind boards. I actually feel that I need something custom for the brown boards and for the sub-foiling waves. That's something that I want to adapt. Well, yeah. I can ride it. I can ride the custom prone boards. I can ride it, no problem. But I like to fine-tune it, you know. Mm. Pretty much all the boards I had for prone foiling were very small, very short, like 25 to 28 liters, but 40 by 18 at the most, you know. So it's really hard to find a custom production board that suits me well size-wise.
Yeah.
But not so much the downwind boards. And then, well, actually, for the downwinders, I'm just scratching the surface, you know. I don't have much experience on the downwinder. Well, I've been doing downwinds for 2 years, 1 year and a half only, and I can come on. Kind of, I can only do it for 3 months, 4 months out of the year because I live very far from where we do the downwinders. So I don't have as much experience on the downwinders as I do have on the waves.
Yeah. So I guess what really intrigued me was you said you've got 14 foot SUP, you know, race board experience, and that really helped you and you learned to foil on the SUP. I was the same, like similar, like lots of SUP race experience. And when I learned to foil at the time, probably similar to you, 2017, like everyone was learning on the SUP because you're already standing. So when the foil starts to lift, you can just lean forward and the board being bigger, you can catch smaller waves. Like there were lots of benefits for people that knew how to paddle.
Yeah, if you know how to paddle, for sure, I would recommend anyone to start on the SUP. It's safer and easier, just like you said, you're already standing up.
Yeah.
No, it's a lot safer than prone paddle and get up on the board. If you don't know how to foil, it's really sketchy.
Oh, so I learned to foil on the SUP and then went to the prone, and I like the board I had rocker. So I got my the Sonova guys, I got them to change the rockers. It was the Tuttle. It wasn't the base plate. So we changed the rocker so it was more flat, but we went too far. And it had like a lot of lift. So I was paddling into waves and it was on the GoFoil. I was on the Kai or the original Maliko, I remember the blue one. And I was paddling in. Oh, so thick. And so I was just getting boosted all the time. But once I was up, I could pump around forever because of that extra sort of basically shim and the big foil, small board. But it was terrifying. You know, like I ate so much shit learning to prone foil on that board. Overfoiled, shimmed the wrong way. And yeah, like you said, you've got to get up. And I was probably, in hindsight, I was learning in the wrong waves, but on the SUP, they were perfect waves because I was already on my feet.
Well, I think everybody went through that back in the day, at that time, 2017, 2018, when all the foiling started. I think we have all gone through these crazy boards with the rocker not well done. And super thick profile foils. It's what we had, you know. We had to learn that way.
Yeah.
And like, it was actually good, you know, because nowadays we give more value to the gear we have now, you know.
Definitely. Yeah.
It's crazy. I remember back in the day, we were riding these foils and my friend, he used to ride. Do you remember those old aluminum foils? from way back in the day.
Yeah, like the air chairs?
Yeah, just like the air chair. He had one like in the 2020s, right? In the early 20s. And he was wearing these boots, the snowboard boots and stuff. And as foam have developed, then the kiters were foiling and making these carbon foils. I was foiling with the like these foils, these super thick foils, and he came up with a kite racing foil. I think it was a Mike's Lab or something.
Yeah.
And he was, man, you should try this. You should try this. So I went towing in with him. And then I got to see what it was, a good foil.
Yeah.
Because we were towing in on this very small surface area foil with a higher aspect already. And from that day, I knew what the foils would be like. Is the foils that we are riding nowadays, you know, like 600 centimeters, 700 centimeters with the higher aspect ratio. From, man, 5 years, 6 years ago, I was already saying that, man, this is the foils that we're going to be riding. And so we are now, you know. It's pretty cool to follow up with this evolution and see how we went. And it went to the direction that we were seeing back in the day with this kite foil racing, you know.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah.
For sure. I wonder if there's more evolution to come, you know, because I feel like there's been, like, it's even in the last 2 or 3 years, I think there's been lots of changes, higher aspect, you know, better roll on foils. But really, I think probably, you know, the original thicker profile to now the thinner profile has been a huge development. And it's making foiling easier for everyone learning and people that are already doing it. I think it makes it easier as well.
Yeah, I think like it's what's happening already. The designs are going to be more focused on each discipline. Like to catch waves, to ride waves, I don't like a super high aspect foil because it's obvious it doesn't roll as much, even though it's a super thin tip. It takes too much to roll from side to side or rail to rail, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So for downwind, for sure, downwind race, for sure you want to have this super high ass foil because you're more like going straight. You want to go straight pretty much because you're racing, not like you're carving. So yeah. If you're carving, if you're catching a wave and you want to carve, especially a hollow wave, you don't want to have too much span. But you want to have a thin profile to go fast. And you don't want to have a short fuselage because you want the stability on that pitch moment. So we're going to find out that each discipline that you do for foiling is going to require a different design.
Yeah. No,
that's good for the development of the sport because it's going to push the engineers to think outside the box and look into the different disciplines that we are doing.
Yeah. For sure. I couldn't agree more. You know, like, I think downwind foils are going to get less carvy and surf foils are going to get like more carvy. And there's going to be this, yeah, there's going to be extremes, I think. You know, the downwind foils at the moment, like you can use them like in the surf, they work. But the surf foils are way nicer. And same for like, you can use surf foils for downwind. If the conditions are really good and you just want to surf, they're good, I think. But like you said, for racing, you're going to lose out on a few things because, you know, it's the fastest line and the straightest. And yeah, let's go into your downwind foil journey. I haven't heard or seen you suffer, but did you struggle learning to downwind foil?
Man, actually, it was really easy for me.
Yeah.
I know it could be a struggle, but it was really easy because I was really used to the pedal already. So I was used to the pedal and I was used to take off and get up on the foil on any wave from half meter to 1 meter and a half. I was already catching waves on the sup. Mm-hmm. So I think the pop up on the bump of a downwinder it's pretty much the same when you pop up your foil on a wave. It's almost like the same amount of strokes and the forces you apply on your feet to bring the foil up are pretty much the same from when you're catching waves or doing a downwinder.
Yeah.
So I was there in the northeast of Brazil. I met with Dane Wilson.
Yeah.
And he was already doing it, you know, like for kilometers, not falling off the board. And I go, man, I want to try this. And he had a board, I think it was a 6'3" by 17 at 75 liter. And man, I walked the wind for like 1 kilometer. And on my first try, man, I got up and flew for the whole kilometer. And then it was like, the sun was about to set. We were like, it was the sun goes down by 6 p.m. in Northeast. And it was already 5 or something. And we'll go, hey, let's go to Jerry. You know, we were on a beach that is 10 kilometers from Jericoacoara. And he was going already by himself. And he goes, do you want to join me? And I go, yeah, I want to join you. And he said, you sure? Because it would be my first time. You know, I couldn't fall because if I crashed, the sun will go down and we wouldn't make it to the place we needed to because it would be fully dark.
Yeah.
No, let's do it. Let's do it. Man, I went, first try, did not fall off the board. And I went the whole way. Man, it was amazing. Well, I was already doing this route on the wing. And when you do downwinders on the wing and then you release the wing, you get the wing down, free fly, and ride the bumps. Well, it's almost like you're surfing. So I already knew how to read the bumps. So having the experience with the paddle from previous subfoiling in waves, adding up with the experience I had doing downwinders on the wing, it was actually really easy. I know it's not easy because I've been coaching a lot of people, I've been teaching, and I'm bringing friends into the sport. And I see the struggle, you know. I know it's not easy. I was fortunate because I spent a lot of time catching waves on the sub. That's why it was easy for me. But I know, man, it's not easy. Actually, I know it's not easy because I've been through some struggles as well. Even though after I was already doing it at ease, as soon as you find a condition where the wind is not fully aligned and the wind starts fading, and then you have a different current, even though sometimes the wind is nuking, but the current's not right. You know, if you have the current pushing on the same direction of the wind,
yeah,
it's not going to be as easy as the current is dropping down against the wind.
Yeah.
So there's always something to make you humble, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think everyone's going to be like, man, Mizo had it easy or something. But like you said, you put the time in on the subfoil. And that tells you the skills of how to use the paddle, how to paddle up. And then coupled with the wing foil experience on the downwind where you're like just free flying the whole time and just reading the bumps, it's the perfect, you know, recipe to have success on the first flight. It also sounds like you had pretty good conditions for the first, you know, that first day.
Yeah.
So I think that's, you know, for those that are looking to learn to downwind, like what Mizo's done is like the perfect template, you know. Spend a lot of time subfoiling in the surf and you got to learn the skills, learn how to use the paddle, wing foil or toe foil or para wing or whatever, downwind, and you'll have that ability to read the bumps and stay up on foil once you're up and going. Obviously, Mizo, you're a very good foiler, so it doesn't really come to a surprise for me, but I think a lot of people will be like, man, so I think you've got to share a failure as well because people want to hear... If people want to hear the struggle, make yourself human.
A lot of failures, it's not easy.
Yeah.
Well, I did a big downwinder last year. I went to Fortaleza, which is the capital of Ceará, all the way down to Jericoacoara. It was a 300 kilometer downwinder, and we managed to do it in 3 days.
Wow.
So I bought the wing with me and that mini pump, you know, those tiny little pumps that you use to inflate potty balloons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I started with the wing for the first 100 kilometers, first day, right? Started with the wing. I rode the wing for 15 kilometers, But I went 8 kilometers out in the ocean to find a good line. And then actually the tide shift in the middle of the well. And then I went out for 6 kilometers and I rode for 15 kilometers. And then I stopped, deflated the wing and went on the sub. As I went on the sub, it was my first time doing that, that coastline on the sub. I did it on the wing before, but not on the sub. And I never went too far out in the ocean. We went really far out in the ocean, man. 6 kilometers out in the ocean from the coast become this big, you know, and you don't see much. So we had a GPS, but even though we had the GPS, the current shifted and I kind of lost track. And then all of a sudden, the wind shifted a little bit onshore. And man, I was struggling to keep up on the good line in order to go straight to my destination. So like 60 kilometers, 70 kilometers, I had to stop, reinflate the wing, and reach out to the line I needed to reach my destination. That was really tough, man, because I was getting exhausted. The wind was pushing me towards the beach, and I was trying to stay on my line. I had to go pumping right all the time, pumping right all the time. I was getting super tired and not being able to keep up, you know, where I needed to. That was a serious struggle.
Yes.
Okay, I reached the wing. I did the next 30 kilometers, reached out the destination. And then next day was a struggle because I broke the paddle.
Oh, no.
I was 11 kilometers far out in the ocean, off the coastline.
That's a long way out.
That was really far. And then I broke the paddle. Broke the paddle, and then I have to reinflate. Luckily, I had the wing.
Yeah.
That's why I paid for this trip, you know, because when you're that far out in the ocean, if you break a paddle and you don't have the wing, you're going to take at least 4 hours to get back to the coastline.
Yeah.
Don't paddle.
How does the little balloon pump work for the wing? How long does it take?
It doesn't take much long, but you cannot put full pressure. If your wing requires 9 PSI, you won't be able to do 9 PSI, but you will be able to put enough pressure to get you out of the situation.
Yeah.
It's not like you're going to have a wing to perform, to go fast, but at least you're going to be able to sail and, you know, save yourself.
Yeah, I always use like the full size like kite pump in a dry bag, and it was, you could get like the same. It was very hard to get the full pressure because you're sitting on the board and you're like pushing down onto the board, and I think the balloon pump makes more sense because neither it's perfect, but like you said, it gives you that safety to get back to, especially when you're so far out to sea. So, you know, that's crazy. You know, you mentioned currents. When I did my 212 kilometer downwinder from in 12 hours or 11 hours from the south coast of New South Wales up to Sydney, I wasn't 6Ks out, but I was maybe 3 or 4 kilometers out at one point. And there's the East Australian current goes from basically Queensland. Like in Finding Nemo, it goes from the north down to the south. So in a southerly wind, it makes the bumps really good, but you're moving really slowly. And so for the Guinness World Record, you know, attempt, it was all about distance and time. So the conditions can be good, but you prefer to be actually with the current with you and the wind and be going faster. So I was out to sea and I was on.
You need light, and if you're going slow, the sun's gonna go down. You're still gonna be out.
Yeah, exactly. So you could be having fun, but there's deadlines. I was doing the slowest kilometers I'd ever done by about 30 seconds, but I was hanging like on these bumps, just like hanging on. And I'm like, what is going on here? And so I'm like, I got to change something. So I went into shore about 2 kilometers, and my speeds per kilometer went up 30 seconds, which is like going from like 20 or 19 k's an hour to like 25 k's an hour. You know, it was pretty significant in just changing that line, and I totally understand the current factor, especially when you're further out to sea. It's serious out there, you know, and yeah.
And it's hard to do the reading because there is so much going through your mind when you're on that situation that it's almost like you get blocked, you know? When you start to struggle, you start to get tired and you don't know what's going on. It's hard to see, you know? You don't see anything because you're stressed. So you did a good job on like recovering yourself and finding a different line to go faster, which, man, that takes a lot of skills, huh? Not easy to do that.
Well, the only option. It was like, yeah.
Being able to think clearly, you know, and reset your mind and reset your line, that's really hard.
Yeah. I was, you know, like I had a boat there sort of helping me out. So I'm going to try this. Okay, go for it. But yeah, when you did your, you know, 100Ks in 300Ks in 3 days, did you have like a boat or people on land or, you know, what safety did you have?
Well, the safety we had, it was me and my buddy. We had a walkie-talkie within us. And we had a bigger walkie-talkie with the car on land.
Yep.
But we went so far out that walkie-talkie communication with land didn't work.
Yeah.
But it worked when we were close because the coastline do this base, right? Mm-hmm. So in the tip of the bay, we were closer. Then the radio worked. But man, just like... Actually, the radio, the GPS we had, the Garmin GPS, worked really well on the SMS text messages.
Mm-hmm.
So we could text if you were in danger. We had many friends on all the stops we did. They were waiting, expecting us. So we did communicate with them by the Garmin GPS through the SMS text message. It worked really well. But the walkie-talkie didn't work so well. But, you know, we were kind of safe. Actually, it is safe because the wind is side-on. It's not fully side or side-off.
Yeah.
You know, as it's side-on, if something goes bad, you just lay down on the board. Of course, you're going to have a backpack with water, with something to eat. You know, you're just going to have to be patient.
Yeah.
And you know, pro paddle until you reach the shore. At some point, you will.
You'll make it eventually. Yeah. I always say to people like that are learning to downwind foil, I always say, don't go further out than you think you can swim in. You know?
Exactly. That's a,
so, yeah. You know, if you're like 11 kilometers out to sea and you've never swum 11 kilometers in your life, then you shouldn't be there, like realistically, yeah. You know? Because if your Allegro breaks or you lose your board or your board breaks or whatever, like, how do you think you're going to get in? Like,
lose your board. If you lose your board, you can die.
Yeah.
Pretty much you can die.
Mm-hmm.
If you lose your board, you might not die, you know?
Yeah.
But if you lose your board, for sure you're going to die because, man, 11 kilometers out, swimming with currents, with sharks, you know, it's you're pretty much a victim out there. But if you have your board, if you had buoyancy, you're good, you know. Like, if I didn't have the wing and my paddle broke, like it happened 2 times on this trip, I could lay down on the board and paddle.
Yeah.
You would take a lot, but I would still be floating on my board.
Yeah.
You know, that would be super safe.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why I'm a big believer in, you know, always wear a leg wrap. Because of exactly that, you lose your board and like you better be a very good swimmer. And obviously there's times where it's less important and times where it's more important, but you know, we're covering a lot of distance when we downwind foil. And to me, I don't know, just get used to a leg rope is my advice for sure.
Man, I hate leash. I hate leg rope when I foil. I really hate it. But man, I love my life. You know, I want to put my life in danger. You know, so when I'm doing short runs, like 5K close to the shore, then I go, I risk myself. I don't tell people to do that. I do it on my own and I take responsibility for that because, man, sometimes the leash bothers, you know,
yeah.
It does bother, but there are many ways we can get used to it. You know, instead, put it in your leg, put it in your waist, instead using a PVC leash. Just use the wing leash.
Yeah.
It's thin, it's light, You know, it won't bother much. On this trip, I actually used the wing leash with the waist belt.
Yeah.
And it was really good because the wing leash, it's a little bit shorter, you know, and the material is made out of cloth. So it's really light. And I think the PVC leashes, it can get cut on the trailing edge of the mast or on the trailing edge of the wing, the front wing or stabilizer because it's sharp. Yeah. So it can get cut it. And if you have a really strong impact when you crash, and if there's a little bit of a cut on your leash, then you can, you know, it can break.
Yeah.
That's why I prefer to use the wing leash, you know, for yeah.
No, I agree. The only thing that gets me with the wing leashes is like if you have a really big crash in the surf or downwind and you like kind of fly through the air, you know, you sort of breach and like then the board gets pulled towards you. I've had a short leash like have the board like land on me and it actually like the trailing edge of the mast landed on my calf, like, you know.
That's the word.
Like a guillotine. And it was the day, it was Christmas Eve, like probably 3 years ago. And it was, I couldn't walk for Christmas Day. And, you know, all the families, what happened to you? What's wrong? And sort of a foiling injury. I just copped the board to the calf. And, yeah, it was a backwash and a wave and, just unlucky. But with a longer leash, it gives you a little bit more time for that to not sort of yank and land on you, which is, it doesn't happen a lot, but I think it's the only thing people have to be aware of is if you're going those shorter like wing leashes with a little bit less sort of stretch, that can happen, which it doesn't happen that often, but right. It only takes one.
You're right, man. Yeah, you gotta, well, then you're gonna have, depending on the conditions, you know, if the waves are big, so there's big waves, big bumps, then you want to have a longer leash for sure. It's better. Yeah, makes sense.
Or like a coil, like a really tight coil that doesn't, like, I guess the Kayaki Invis leash is good because it has the tight coil.
The coil has to be thick.
Yeah, yeah.
So it doesn't drag, you know. And I had a coil leash. The coil, the PVC was not thick enough.
Uh-huh.
So when it touched the water, it would be stretching and dragging on the water.
Yeah, yeah.
So if the PVC is thick, as it touches the water, it won't drag because it has enough strength not to be pulled on the water, you know?
Yeah. I was actually coaching a mate the other day from San Francisco, and he uses the Kytus used to use them a lot. It's like a plastic sort of case, and it has like a pull.
I've seen that. Like in the dog leash, that dog leash that you pulls into the thing.
Exactly. Yeah, and he's like, he swears by it. He goes, it's the best. It's like, it's as long as it needs to be if I fall, and it's as short as I want it to be when I'm foiling. So it looks heavy, you know. I think there's probably a market out there to create something that's probably a bit more water sports or foil specific. But I think the leashes for foiling is something, maybe that's going to improve more than foiling, you know, like the foils themselves.
The 90s there, you know, you just take the brands to do something specific for this sport, you know. There's room for
sick. So how did it end up, the 3 days, 300 k's?
Well, the first day we did 100, second day we actually did it in 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
Because the third day was really, well, the third day, if we did it in 3 days, the third day we will have to do 130 km because we did 100 on the first day. And then the second day we did just 30 km. And then as the second day we did 30 just for chill. It was the best route, man. The bumps were insane. And then we got to chill the rest of the day. We did it in like 3 hours only.
Yeah.
It was cool. And then the third day was good, but the last day was a nightmare. And the last day was the worst because we were a bit stubborn because we knew that part of the route would be really tough because there's a lot of river mouths. And then there on the northeast, as soon as it starts raining, the sweet water that goes into the sea from the rain, it kills the seaweed that sits on the bottom.
Seaweed strikes again. Yeah.
Man. And also, we had to go really, really far out. We did like 12 kilometers out because the tide coefficient was huge. And we had these fishing traps. These fishing traps is like, let's say that 1 kilometer and a half in some places, 2 kilometers and a half off the sand. They build this line with sticks that goes like for 6 feet tall, two meters tall sticks. And they make this lines of sticks. And then in the tip of the line of sticks, there is this circle thing all made of sticks. So they call it fishing traps. So when the tide is super low, they go there, the fishermen go there, and the fishes are always all trapped in these things. So we had to go really far out, right?
With those, yeah.
To avoid these things, because you know what? If the tide is high, the coefficient is so big that the tide will hide these sticks, and then you don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
You go through, then you can hit it, you know?
Yeah.
It's made out of wood. Man, you don't want to crash a foil and fall in because this thing can rip you apart, right?
Yeah.
So we went really far out in the ocean. And then as we went far out in the ocean, man, the wind was so strong. I think it was over 40 knots that we couldn't see the land because the sand was flying. It was all white.
Ah, yeah.
We couldn't see like 2 kilometers ahead of us. We couldn't see anything from water and sand and this mist all over the place. So we went really, really far. And it was still very shallow, you know? And after like 30 kilometers, we started to face the seaweed, man. Dude, it was a nightmare. I reinflate the wing, and I went on the wing, and me and my friend, we were crashing for every 50 meters, 100 meters, we were crashing. Man, I was get up, start flying on the wing and crash. Get up again, start flying on the wing and crash. Dude, it was the worst time of my life. I would never do that route again.
Yeah.
And I would not suggest anyone to do that route. Next time I go through this route, I'll go inland. And I will drive around these river mouths and all these fishing trap stuff. And I was restart over, you know.
Yeah.
It was gnarly. But the finishing was amazing because the last 20K of the route, the conditions were insane because it was...
They're like 40 knots. It's like, there's like, you know, basically like I call it smoke on the water. Like the water becomes like part of the air at that point. Like,
yeah, you don't see a little thing, man.
Nah.
I couldn't see 1 kilometer in front of me. Luckily, we had the GPS, so we could manage our route. We know where we were, and we knew where we need to go.
Yeah.
That's what saved us, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, the last leg was amazing. After the seaweed nightmare, we had a sunset dream, so it was all good. We finished right on time for the sunset with a very strong wind and the bumps. We're insane. We had the tide dropping. Everything like went well after the nightmare. But man, it was the toughest time of my life. I was pissed.
Were you winging? Or you said your paddle broke on day one or day two? So
yeah, I have two broken paddles on day two and day three.
So you were winging the last bit.
The last bit, yeah, after the paddle broke, I was winging. Luckily, the paddle broke on the very end of the routes.
Yeah.
First, though, it broke on the foil. And the second paddle broke on the stroke while I was paddling.
Aka. Yeah, nothing worse.
I don't buy paddles anymore, man. I don't buy. You know what I do? I get all these broken paddles and I fix them myself. I put so much fiber on it. I fix it really well.
Yeah.
And it becomes strongest pedal on the planet.
Yeah.
my pedal, my all my pedals, after I break them, they don't break anymore, man.
Yeah.
I know how to with resin. I know how to work with epoxy resin and stuff, carbon fiber. Yeah. So I just, like I said, I don't buy pedals anymore. I just hunt the broken pedals for my friend. He just giving it to me. I fix it and off I go, you know?
Yeah, stronger than ever before.
$500 on a brand new pedal to break on the first day?
Yeah.
No way, man. Too expensive. I'd rather just fix him. Take it off the garbage.
For sure. The number of paddles I see, like a friend of mine threw, he broke his paddle and he threw it out. There's nothing wrong with it. Like the paddle, I actually cut it and I gave it to my son. And he's got his own little paddle now. But yeah, I think anyone who does, like people out there that break paddles, like they're not that hard to fix. And your local, you know, ding repair or, you know, carbon fiber sort of guy will definitely be able to fix them. There's a guy here, Kev Clarett, Fixology on the Northern Beaches. And the number of paddles he fixes, like, and the number of paddles he sees that are thrown out, he's like, nah, he gets them out of the bin and he'll fix them himself. And he's got the strongest paddle and it's not. They're not rubbish once they're broken. They can be fixed.
No,
they can
be better. If you know how to fix them, it's gonna be strongest as never.
Yeah,
stronger as never for sure.
Yeah,
man. Yeah. Because it's really frustrating to spend a lot of money on a good pedal and you break it first day.
Yeah,
and going through a lot of that, man. I've been breaking many, many pedals, hitting the rail, hitting the foil, or just on the stroke. You know. I push really hard when I pedal, so it breaks.
Yeah.
Actually, I found out that when I was riding shorter pedals, I was breaking it more because the pedal was not going into the water, the whole pedal, you know? I was like, as the pedal was short, just half of the blade was getting into the water. So it was cracking right where the amount of the that was reaching the water, you know.
Yeah.
Once I started to use the longer pedal and the whole blade was getting into the water, I stopped breaking the blades.
Technique will help you. More power too, huh?
Better. Yeah, more power, sure. And actually, when you have a longer pedal and you're up flying up on the foil, and you're up on the foil and you're pedaling, right? You're flying the foil and you still do some strokes. I think having a longer paddle, it helps you because you can have a better posture. For me, man, this is what I tell to my students. Posture on the foil is everything. When you're up on the foil, you want to be able to be straight with your back straight. And you want to have your head on top of your shoulders on top of your ribs on top of your hips.
Yeah,
you can flex your hips and your knees a little bit. When you want to have your trunk in your cervical spine straight.
Yeah.
So when you have longer paddle, it does help with the technique, so you're more upright. Nowadays, my paddles are huge, man. I'm a very short man, but my paddles are huge.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I totally agree, and one thing I tell people is most people have their hands too wide on the paddle. So if your paddle is, you know, too long, and your grip is wide, you're still going to be squatting down a lot. Whereas if you have your hands close together, like you said, you're more relaxed, you're more upright, your posture's better, and you can actually get better technique, better power, and at the end of the day, like it's a better overall experience because of
energy as well.
Yeah, the alignment. Yeah,
and in the foil, posture is everything. So anything you can do to have a better posture when you're sub downwind or sub foiling, it will be easier on your body, and in the end of the day, like you said, you're gonna spend less energy, and as you spend less energy, you get to learn more, you know, and develop your technique better.
Yeah. Well, okay. While we're on that, like, what are the three biggest, or what are the three best tips you can give to crew who like are learning to downwind foil? Like, what are your three best tip?
Well, doing what I did was really good, you know, like spend time with the pedal, get comfortable with the pedal technique. Even if you're pedaling just on the sub without your foil, you know, just get used to, you know, like rowing, get used to row, spend time on rowing, a lot of rowing to work on your posture, you know, work on spending less energy as you do more reps with your row. That's really important. And then foil as much as you can to have more time on the foil. If you have more time on the foil, it's like more time flying, more knowledge of the foil, you're more used to it. So if you can wing and free fly, that will help a lot. If you can pump, I think pumping is something really important for one to get good at downwind, because when you are between bumps, you want to be able to pump to connect the dots. And I think it's the three things, right? Pedal, pump, and surf foil. Because when you're on the bump, you're on a wave. So the more you surf foil, the better reading you have, easier it's going to be when you're downwinding. And then if you know how to pump, because of course, you can manage to, if you're really good, you can manage just to ride the bumps without pumping if you're really good at reading. But if you're not there yet, and obviously nobody's going to get there on the first time, you want to be able to pump, change the bumps, right? So if you can do it separately, each part of downwinding, pumping, work on your pumping techniques. Surf foiling is going really good for that. You do your rowing, doesn't matter how. You just row, man, go paddling, doesn't matter how.
Yeah.
And you surf. If you do a little bit of everything and then you get good at everything, you go sub-foiling, put time on it, and you're going to get all these three factors all together, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's a good tip.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. I think, and like, to me, I always say to people, you have to be able to master the paddle. Like, the paddle's got to be a tool that you can use to help yourself. It's not a hindrance. And if the paddle feels like a hindrance, you're not ready yet. Like, the paddle needs to be something that is helping. And it should, to me,
the paddle has to be part of yourself. The paddle has to be part of your arms.
Yeah.
As the foil is an extension of your body, it's like you're walking on the water.
Yeah.
The paddle is an extension of your body as well, because it's like, is your arms paddling, you know?
Yeah, exactly. The paddle has got to be like, yeah, as you said, a part of you, and it's natural to feel like it should be a natural sensation to do a good paddle stroke.
Yeah.
And then like on the pumping, I think being able to generate your own speed from pumping rather than relying on the wing and then gliding and then to coming down, or a wave, gliding 5, 6, 7 pumps, then down. If you can get past that sort of 5, 6, 7 pumps and start to generate your own speed and create your own speed and continue to keep pumping for, you know, if you're pumping 20 good pumps, 20 to 30, you're now generating your own speed. You're not relying on, yeah, a wave or the wind or whatever. You're creating the speed yourself. And like I said before, posture and stance are super important for that, for learning to pump and generate your own speed. And then the final one I love, the surf foiling. If you surf foil a lot, you can read the waves. And one of the drills I always get my students to do is, if you're pumping on a wave, you're not reading the wave correctly.
No, not at all. Because the wave gives you energy. You don't need to pump on it.
Exactly. So if you can ride it, you know, obviously there's some waves that sort of break apart and you have to pump a little bit, but if it's a good wave, you should ride it start to finish with zero pumps, no pumping at all. And then you're understanding how the wave works and how to, you know, to foil, you know, properly and read the waves properly. You know, I was watching some of the replays of Bell's Beach, and Griffin Colapinto, one of the waves, like he'd take off and he'd stop. You know, he wouldn't move his body. He'd just sort of wait, and then the wave would sort of pick him up. And then he'd do a turn, and instead of pumping and, you know, maneuvering to get more speed, he'd stop for a moment, and then he'd do his turn. And, it's just, you know, it's the same for all wave sort of riding. The less you do, the better in some respects. The wave's always going to pick you up and push you. If you try to work harder and pump and try to overpower the waves, you're going to be wasting your energy.
It's all about connection.
Connection. Yeah, exactly.
Thanks for complimenting these things I said. Maybe because I don't speak English naturally, English is not my main language. Sometimes it's hard to find the right
sentence. It was a perfect explanation.
But thanks for your compliments. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, I think connection is the key word, because connection to your paddle, connection for catching the wave, connection to the foil when you're pumping, connection to the wave once you're up and riding. So it's if it's all together and connected, it's like you said, your first run, it was easy, right?
Man, I think it was easy as well, because I wanted so bad, dude. It's like the first thing I saw on the foil was that clip from Kyle Lanning with that huge sub board that he chopped the tail and he went down, and I think the whole world got frothed from him seeing him doing that.
Definitely.
But the first thing I saw on the foil that really opened my mind was that clip from him. So from that day, I wanted to downwind foil. But when I leave, there is no downwind foil at all. So I had to travel up north to do it. But when I did travel up north to do it, I was already winging. And I didn't have the right gear to do the sub-foil and downwind. So it took me a long time with that, hunger to do something like that. So I wanted so bad. So as soon as I found the right gear, the right condition, and someone to push, so I'm really thankful for Dane Wilson, man.
Yeah.
He pushed me and he said, man, go for it. You can do it. And I said, okay, well, and then I did it. So, man, I wanted so bad that made everything easier, man. So I think when you want something really, really bad, and you have the right gear and the right condition, it should be easy as well if you have a little bit of technique, for sure.
You've done all the groundwork, I guess, is the best way to put it. You already sub-foiled.
Yeah.
You already had done downwinders on the wing. It was just putting the pieces together. Conditions were good. Away you go. Yeah. So cool. I want to shift focus now a little bit. We're both a little bit injured. I've got a hairline fracture on my ankle, and you've had some surgery in your teeth. We're both out of the water for a little bit, and we were talking before about how an injury can be made into a positive. So, what are your thoughts on it all?
Well, I think the best way is to think that we are going to these tribulations, I say, to grow as a human being, because when you're just super healthy, riding all the time, being on the sun, being active with what we love to do, it's easy, it's actually easy to go through life like that. But life is not always easy. And sometimes we have to scale it down a little bit, get some rest, think about different stuff. And I think injuries, they come in our life so we can, reorganize, reset our routes, think about something different, do something different, because life may be asking us for it, And then we get off, we reset our minds, we rest, we think about different stuff that life may be requiring, and then we come back. It's in the beginning, I was really frustrated at coursework, like I said, not being able to go in the water. And right now it's autumn here in Brazil, so the waves are really, really good, man. All these 40 days that I'm out of the water, the swell has been pumping, man. There's waves every day. There's always wind. I see my friends going out in the water all the time. I see the videos. I see the forecast. But I cannot go. It's hard. The first 10 days was really hard. But when you start focusing on something else, on something major, which is our health, it becomes easier. I'm not feeling bad, so much bad anymore, because I'm not out in the water. Okay, right now it's time to focus on my health, get better, and I'll come back, man. As best as I was, you know, like actually in this 40 days window that I was out in the water, I managed to go in the water for 3 days. And I actually felt really good. I felt that the technique was there, you know, my physical performance was not as good as it was before, for sure, because I was lacking conditioning. But the technique was there, you know, the muscle memory on the foil was there. And I've never stayed that long without foiling. I was out of the foil for 30-something days, 35 days, I think. In these 3 days windows that I went, I felt like, man, it's just like riding a bike. You never forget. This is what I tell all my students as well, you know. Once you learn how to foil, just like riding a bicycle, you will never forget how to control the foil. So, but anyway, you know, it's hard to deal with the injury. You know, you get worried with your health. You know, like I'm a 40 years old man already, so healing takes a little bit longer. But like I said, there's many more things to focus on. You know, family. For sure, man, for family, it's actually been good being out of the water. You know, I'm spending much more time with my kid. I get to follow her, you know, take her to school every day. I make her lunch every day because before when I was just foiling, I was out of the house pretty much all day long, you know, for work, to be on the water, to be testing gear, to be riding, to be shooting. And I would miss a lot of my family, you know?
Yeah.
So it's been nice. I bet for you it's the same. How long you've been out of the water?
I think it's been like 14 days. So not that long. Maybe a little bit longer now. 20 days maybe. Like I'm not counting. Like you said, the first couple of days I was bummed, but I was trying to make a positive out of it, you know, like a banged up ankle and couldn't really walk, felt like I couldn't really do much. I said, like, what can I do? What can I do to make myself like happy, a bit of purpose? And the first thing I remember, I came back from the hospital and my son was here and my wife was out and we're just playing with a car on the veranda, you know, just like pushing the car. He was pushing it to me and I pushed it back to him. And I was like, look, there's plenty of things, like there's plenty of stuff that I can do. And like, that was pretty special for me, like, you know, feeling bummed. And he's like, yeah, dad, let's play the car. You know, just, it's just as simple as just pushing the car or kicking a ball, you know, pushing the ball from him to me. Really special. And then, you know, got the itch to sort of start doing some more exercise. I think like after the third day, I'm like, I need to do something. And so I did like an upper body, like sort of just a like dumbbell workout. And it was just, you know, it was just something that sort of got the heart rate going, got the energy flowing. And my wife was just like laughing. She's like, 3 days, you're already like itching to do something. But, you know, my whole body was fine. It was just my ankle, you know? So I started that. And then, you know, I've been getting out like to the gym and doing like assault bike workouts and like ski erg, and like there's things you can do. And obviously, you know, the ocean is our passion, and that's what we love. But I wasn't allowed in the water because of the cut where the mast hit my ankle. So I was on antibiotics to prevent that from infecting the bone. And you know, it was like there's plenty of other things we can do and other things that, you know, are going to help once they get back into the water as well. So I keep that conditioning up, get that strength up, and yeah, family time, spending time with my mum's 60th, you know, so we had a surprise party for her, and that was the day after I did my ankle, and it was nice, you know. It was just like the surf was pumping that day, you know, it was awesome. But, you know, it was like, I wouldn't, even if I wasn't injured, I wouldn't have been in the water anyway, you know, because of the ankle. So It was super nice, just family time. And, you know, and then when I did have my little windows, I made sure that, you know, I did something that sort of kept me, I guess, not too grumpy, you know, because you get a little bit down. And if you don't get your exercise in and feel like you're not working towards your goals, then you feel like you're just bummed about it. But yeah, there's ways that we can work around it.
I think it's hard because as we are athletes, we are used to build so much endorphin in our body, so much. And all of a sudden, we are not making endorphins anymore.
Indeed.
It's really hard because it's almost like a drug addiction, you know?
Yeah.
You get endorphin all the time, so you're always on higher level of endorphin, and all of a sudden you're not anymore. You're sitting at home with an injury. And that's why the first 10 days is really hard. But after that, your body get used to it again, you know? And like I said, there's so many things we can do, you know? There's many more things to look out in life. Even though we are professionals at what we do, and we do this for a living, you know? Like for me, being out of the water for 40 days, it's being hard to keep up with my contract. I'm a professional rider, you know? Luckily, my sponsor, F1, man, is really nice to me. I called my boss the other day. I spoke with Giuliano, and he said, man, you're good. You do a lot. It's like you're not in the water, but you're still doing connections. You know, you're still representing the brand. People are still calling you to ask for advice on what gear to buy, on what gear to ride. So you're still working. It's not out on the water.
Yeah.
It's fine. Take your time.
And you're still pumping out, you know, your social media stuff too. Like I saw a clip just the other day on the Supfoil, and that wasn't 40 days ago. You know, that was.
Well, luckily I had so much content, man. I had a lot of content that I can still, you know, keep pushing the social media, you know, keep pushing the frost, keep showing what we can do with this foil sport, you know, keep motivating people. That works as well. You know, like I said, I'm still alive. So I'm still talking to people. I'm still doing my job, you know, I'm just not in the water. But it's good, you know, the other part of injury is that work on the mental strength.
Yes.
That's been really good to me because it's the first time of my life that I'm off for 40 days. I've never been off for 40 days.
Yeah.
So I've been studying a lot, you know, working on my spirituality, you know, doing a lot of meditation, eating healthy, resting. It's nice because it's nice, actually. I'm trying to look on the positive side. You know, the depressive state is gone already, you know. Now I'm like really looking forward to heal and to be back in the water as soon as possible.
Yeah, I think it sounds like, sort of similar to me, it's like you're going to come back bigger and better than ever before, you know, because it's like a big reset. What's important to you, you know, your health, you know, and then getting back in the water and having everything working properly and, you know, I think it's, as you said, you've got to look at it not in a depressive state, but in a positive state. And it's, in the long run, I think, you know, it's just a small amount of time. And a lot of people never do what we do, you know, and they're like 40 days out of the water. That's normal. But for us, it's a long time, you know. It's like, man.
Especially because it's our job, you know. It's our job. Imagine you stay 40 days without working, man. I'm very fortunate to have a contract. Because otherwise, imagine 40 days without working. Nobody will hold you for 40 days without working. Imagine if you're a building constructor.
You know? You're gone.
You're going to lose your job. You know, it's really tough.
Yeah. I've been coaching because I wasn't allowed in the water with a BB talking headset. So like, you know, the walkie talkie sort of thing and then a drone. So, meet up.
Is a deep talking, man. It's really nice.
So good. Like, I'm just like, you know, flying the drone. I feel like I'm out there with them, you know, and in some ways I'm coaching better because I can see exactly what they're doing and I'm only focusing on them, you know, whereas if I'm in the water with them, I got to focus what I'm doing and what they're doing.
No, it's much better because depending on the level of your student, you can release them to go in the water. You give them the advice before they go.
Yeah.
And then when they go, you just give the orientation by the radio and record it on the drone. Mm. And afterwards, it's going to be a lot better for you to tell him what he did wrong or what he can improve.
Yeah. You know?
For sure, you're going to step up your game of coaching.
Yeah. We didn't go into it, but like, tell us, like, what's your background? Obviously, you're coaching and you're foiling, but like, what were you doing as a, like, were you a professional surfer? Were you a professional SUP, like kiting? What was your background?
Man, I did a lot of things in life, huh? I always surfed as a background for water sports, shortboard surfing. And then I never wanted to be a professional surfing because, man, being a professional surfing in Brazil is really hard. And I don't have that level to become a professional. I didn't have that level to become a professional surfer. So I always had to work. And then from my early 15 years of age until my 25 years old, I was building surfboards. So I built surfboards for a long, long time. And then I went to marketing school. I did work a little bit, and then I worked with filming. And then I did gastronomy school. I worked for a lot of years in the kitchen. And then I went to physical education school. I worked with physical training for a long time. And then when I was actually working in the physical training, but more on the recovery physical therapy clinic, I was working there. Then I started foiling. I was still surfing, and then I started foiling. And then, man, foiling came with all the hype, with all that craziness that I was dreaming that I was foiling. I think everybody goes through that when you learn how to foil. You dream that you're flying.
For sure.
Anyway, and then I met F1, and then we started working on the development of foils, development of, you know, the market and stuff. The sport grew up. They invited me for a sponsorship. And then I started to become, you know, a professional rider. And after a few years, I gathered all my knowledge from the physical training world. And I bought into the, because I know I'm a good teacher, you know. I know a lot about biomechanics from the physical education field.
Sure.
And I brought that into foiling, and now I'm, you know, professional rider, and also I have a foil school where I teach people how to foil. I do a lot of coaching on wing foiling as well and surf foiling. This is it. Trying to short down my life. There's a lot.
Yeah, no, it's a good summary. So now, like, your main job is, like, obviously professional foiler and then coaching. It's kind of the same as what I'm doing.
Yeah, coaching is really nice, man. I like to do the coaching because I think it's really easy for me to teach. And it's a really technical sport to learn.
Super.
And then if you find a teacher that is a good foiler, that knows about techniques, knows about gear, and knows how to use the right equipment to teach, then you have the perfect world to learn, you know? So I bought a Zodiac, a little tiny boat. And then I have all the gear, the beginner's gear, everything to teach. And I love to teach people, man. I love to bring people into the sport. It's something I can give back to the sport. Because I think me being on the field of teaching people and coaching, I'm bringing people to have the same feeling I have when I'm flying the foil. And I know that there's a lack of good instructors with good knowledge to teach foiling. So I love doing it, man. I love bringing people into the sport. I love bringing people into this realm of foiling, you know. And it only grows when there's more and more people interested in learning. I know it's not a cheap sport, and that's the greatest challenge I had, because I know many, many people that want to learn how to foil, but they don't have the money, because they said, well, it's not cheap, you know, like the lessons are expensive, the gear is expensive. To make the school happen, it's not cheap, because I need to use fuel, I need to use the boat. Well, obviously, my coaching is not cheap because it's my time, it's my knowledge, you know. So I charge what I think it's fair to pay all the costs I have and to make some extra money as well, you know. So this is what hard. I think we should all find a way to make this sport more popular, you know.
Yeah, because for sure. I think the biggest thing, like people say it's expensive, is that, yeah, look, it's expensive. compared to surfing. It's really expensive compared to surfing.
Compared to surfing, it is. And surfing is easy. All you need is a piece of foam, then lay down and let the white water hit you, and then you're surfing, you know?
Yeah. Whereas, like, if you compare it to, like, cycling, or triathlons, man.
Oh, it's cheap.
Boiling is cheap. Super cheap.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that do triathlons or cycling or running, and I think the biggest thing is it's expensive compared to surfing, and it's hard to learn. You know, it's not something that you can just jump on the bike and you go, or you start running and you go, or you, as you said, you get a bit of foam and you catch a wave. It's tricky, you know, and that's where I think, as you said, it's really important that there's people that are coaching all around the world so that we can grow this sport. Because for me, like coming from SUP racing and surfing beforehand, where, you know, it really exploded, plateaued, and in Australia, it's really died away. There were never many young people that were, you know, stand-up paddling. In foiling, there's more young people. Like the probably the average age of like the local crew here in Sydney is like probably between like 25 and 40. Whereas for the stand-up paddling, it was like 40 to 50. So to me, that's a really good sign that there's young people getting into the sport, and it's because they're in the sport now, they're going to continue through for another, you know, 20, 30 years, because you're foiling something that you can do once you learn it. It's not so hard on the body, you know, like
it's not hard on the body at all, man. Like yeah. I had many, many injuries on my knees and my ankles, even in my hip from surfing, and in foiling, man, all my joints are stronger and safer. I never had a sprain on my ankle or on my knee. Well, foiling is dangerous. You can get hurt. You can die foiling, actually. Let's be honest, right?
Yeah. But you're like, I'm getting here with a sore ankle, and you know, so I told a story about the sore calf as well. So, you know, the foiling is...
Yeah, but it was a trauma. It was not a sprain. It's not that you twisted your ankle. Yeah, it's different. Sure. Surfing has you have the impact directly. You know, in foiling, there's no impact. It's like you're on a, I don't know, it's like a...
Magic carpet, you know, you're floating. You're in a cloud, you know,
Impact. Yeah. There's no spring. So it's much lighter on your body, you know.
Yes.
Well, you can get hit. You can get a trauma. For sure, it can happen. Let's be honest. But if you do compare, I think we will see less injuries in general than with regular surfing.
Yeah.
Especially performance field, you know.
Yeah.
A high performance surfer, man, they get injured all the time.
Yeah.
They do like they boost a 2 meter high air, they land, and man, the impact is so hard.
For sure.
So many busted ankles, busted knees. And in foiling, you don't see that much, you know. Yeah. Foiling, you will see some cuts from the foil, you know, like you had cuts on the head. I cut in my heads many times. That's why nowadays I go with a helmet all the time.
Yeah.
I use helmets, man. I know it's not the prettiest thing ever, but I do use helmets. I prefer
I think it's coming around. Like you even see like the top pro surfers, like they're using helmets in heavy waves, and like for foiling, a heavy wave doesn't have to be that heavy. For foiling, like if it's shoulder high and it's sort of barreling, then that's a heavy wave, you know? So I think I was wearing a helmet when I did my ankle, and you know, if that mast had hit me in the head, I would have been okay because I had the helmet on, you know. Whereas if I didn't have the helmet on, probably knocked out, you know. So helmets, I think I'm going to start wearing more and more of.
Yeah, it's good. Sometimes I don't wear it if I'm prone paddling on a very small day. I might not use the helmet, but when I'm wing, for sure I use the helmet all the time, because when you're winging, you have the wing to pay attention to, and you have the board to pay attention to. So there are two things, and your hands are attached to the wing, right? When you're prone foiling or sub-foiling small waves, you only have the board to deal with. So your attention, it's only on the board. So it's a little bit easier to pay attention to the board and protect yourself, you know? That's why when I go winging, man, even if I just go for a cruise, you know, 10 knots on flat water, I go with the helmet. You know, actually, I'm getting old as well. I'd rather please do.
Yeah, me too. I'm the same. I'm like, I got kids. I don't want to have a, like, I don't want to get knocked out and drown in the water. I don't want to get, like, stitches in my head, be out of the water for however long. You know, it's just, that's the worst. As you get older, you get smarter too.
Exactly. We want to play it safe to play it for longer.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Well, I've really enjoyed this chat, Mizo. I know it's getting pretty late for you over in Brazil. So thank you for your time. It's been really nice to chat with you. And I still have more questions I want to ask you, but I think.
Go for it, man. It's all good.
Yeah. Well, just chat. Like, have you done any downwind races? Like, I know there's the Molocabra. Like, did you head up to that one?
Well, I did the Molocabra on the wing for two times. Yeah. Actually, I won the first time I did. And then the second time I did, I got third. Yeah, I did it for two times, but there was no sub-foiling back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. Nowadays, I don't care about competitions anymore. I'd love to go to Hawaii to do the M2O.
Mm-hmm.
But man, it's so expensive, man. Coming from Brazil, you spend like $1,000 just for a boat, plus the accommodation, plus the flight. It's crazy.
It's expensive for everyone. I think even the Hawaiians complain about it being expensive and doesn't include flights or accommodation. You know, it's an expensive race, but I think there's something in it. Like you just said, like, you're not that interested in competition, but a race like that is something that you'd like to do. And I think
the experience.
Yeah, the experience, exactly. I think that's what we have to, like, to me, I'm worried that racing is going to become too much of a, you know, you just to come first and just to, you know, I think to me, downwind foil racing, where our sport is now, is about getting the community together. And obviously, like, you know, you can race. I love racing. I love the competitive stuff, but not everyone is the same as that. And some people, like, are actually intimidated about that. They don't want that. They want to distance themselves from that. I think that's totally fine. Everyone's got different personalities. And for me, I want to try to create, like, encourage events to create, like, this real sense of community for these downwind foil races. Because downwind foiling, compared to surf foiling or even surfing, the more people, the better. Like, once you're out there, having more people is more fun. You know, it's actually super cool. And you share stories. Remember that section? I did this cool turn. I got a really fast kilometer here, really fun surfy section here. And there's got to be a way, you know, to create that. And I'm worried that the downwind foil racing or races are becoming too racy. You know, it's too much about speed, which that's sport. I totally get it. I love it. I love that part of the sport, but I also love the other part of the sport that's just everyone getting out there together. So I think the community events are super important. And to me, to couple it up with a competitive race and like a sort of social thing makes a lot of sense, but some people get a bit, like you said, like you'd be put off, like you're not that competitive, you don't want to. So I don't know, do you have any ideas on that? Like what would you suggest? What can we do?
Man, I think the community, it's the most important thing, especially for us. We are representative of the sport, you know. There's a lot of people that we've been fighting since day one, you know, like. And for us, as we form opinions, it's way more important to get the tight community, inspire people, and even bring people that are not interested in competition for the competitions, for the experience of being with other riders, being around the pack of 10 guys that wanted to get there first. It's nice for everyone, you know, even for the lowest skilled rider to be around the top riders. And like you said, the forming of the community is important. I love to go for the competitions, but like I said, around here, there's only one. There's only the Molocabra. And I haven't done the Molocabra on the sub. Let's see if this year I can make it. But last year I was busy with coaching. So that's why I didn't do it. I know they had the event and the conditions were amazing.
Yeah.
A lot of French people came. I think five guys came from France. A lot of guys from Brazil that are starting to downwind foil.
What dates is it?
I think last year was in the end of August.
Yeah.
And this year, I think it's going to be around there, first week of September, I guess. I'm not sure. But it's always like between the end of August and the middle of September. It's because when the best wind window in Brazil is. And yep. They try to push competition with the best conditions.
For sure. Yeah, I'd encourage everyone to get to. I'm not going to be able to make it this year because again, I got coaching, got a bit of work on then. But like, it's on my bucket list, the Molacabra for sure. And I think it's not so much about the competition; it's about visiting other communities that are passionate about the stuff that we're doing. You know, so it's like I want to meet people in Brazil that are doing the same thing that I'm doing here in Australia. And like,
you have to come to Brazil all the season just to see like. There's so many routes, man. There's so many kilometers that we can run long. Man, long downwinders, short downwinders. You can do a trip around the whole coast of Brazil just by the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
You put flags inside of the car, you're going to tell the driver to drive for 100, for 200, for 300 kilometers, and off you go by the ocean.
Yeah.
You don't need to sit in the car. It's a really special place. So if you ever want to come, I suggest you to come around this time, August, September, and then you can do the Molacabra because it's always around those dates, you know?
Yeah, that'd be cool. Definitely love to do it. I think it's the beauty of events or races are that it brings everyone together to one thing. Whereas if I was to come and just do a trip, I'd probably just be looking to do downwinders and like I said, travel around. You wouldn't ever do a down. It's very difficult to organize a downwinder with more than even 10 people, you know, because the car shuttles and everyone's schedules and whatever it is. When a race
the logistics
is on,
the
logistics are tough. When a race is on, everyone sort of moves their schedules to make it align with that start and finish. Which is, to me, that's the beauty of a race, and that's the beauty of the events, and it brings community together. And it's not so much about winning or losing, and obviously there's going to be people that just want to win and other people who don't want to go in because they're not going to win, but you learn so much from other people doing races like that. But also it's just fun, like sharing stories. That's what it's about to me.
I think it's cool from someone like you as a reference of the sport, because I know you have won a lot of races in Hawaii and stuff. With your knowledge, to have this mindset of building the community and telling people that it's not just about winning, you know, it's about sharing experiences and growing the community. That's really nice to hear that from you as a reference of the sport. It's a really cool mindset, and that will encourage a lot of people to come into the sport because, you know, people are going to have you as an example of a successful competitor, you know, that have won a lot of contests, a lot of competitions with the mindset of, hey, it's not about winning anymore. You know, this is about sharing and learning, and someone like you to provide this mindset. Like I said, you will encourage people to be around you because it's not like you're that super hot athlete that have won a lot of competitions. And now you're not focused on being on the front pack anymore. You want to be with the crew. You want to be supporting people. You want to be pushing people to, you know, to become better, you know? That kind of mindset is really important for the sport. So I give you props on that.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Matt. Yeah, I think I'm just passionate about that. I just know that it's not like surfing where like you want to go out and have less people out there. But for me, downwind foiling and the beauty of a race is you're out there with 50, 100, 150 people. And yeah, like, you know, last year, Molokai Tuai, there were boat, you know, lots of boat wash. And I think they're going to have to they're going to have to fix that somehow. But having 150 people out there without boat wash, it isn't a concern. And look, if it is a concern, look, you just go a little bit to your right, a little bit to your left. Sit down, wait for 2 minutes, go again. Like it's, you have your own space. The ocean's so big. Downwind foiling
is. Oh, why you need a boat? I'm not, in Brazil, you don't need a boat.
That's good. Makes it a lot cheaper.
You don't need a boat. There's no boat wash, man. You're going to be flying without bothering, you know, nothing bothers.
Yeah.
There's Brazil is really special because of that, because, man, it's a really long, long shore with side winds. So it's actually really safe, you know.
Yeah.
Nothing bad can happen. It's really safe. That's why I like it here so much. There's not a whole lot of sharks, you know. There's not much to bother. The water is, I call it 30-30. 30 degrees with 30 knots every day for 6 months.
Oh, that sounds like the dream. 30 knots. 30
degrees. It is. And I keep saying that to everyone, you know, and people are more and more looking into coming to Brazil for the downwind season.
Yeah.
It's really special, man.
That's so cool. Well, now, I think that was the last question I wanted to ask. So, anything you want to leave everyone with that's listening? Comment.
Man, update. I truly appreciate you reaching me out. It was really nice to meet you. I think we have never spoken before. It was really nice to chat with you. You're such a humble dude. Pretty cool to share a little bit, you know, about what I've been doing. I truly appreciate the opportunity of speaking about foiling and sharing my passion. I truly appreciate everyone that will join this. And I hope that the tips that we spoke about will help a lot of people to, you know, encourage themselves to learn the sport. And, you know, it's not like a super hard sport, foiling in general. So people, if people listen to those that are there already for a long time, and if they can take some of the advices, that will be super helpful for everyone. And for me, it's always a pleasure to help as I do coach. For me, it's always a pleasure to teach people, help people. So having the opportunity of coming here and speaking about this, it's, I'm super thankful, super happy to be talking about this.
Yeah, thanks so much for your time, man. I've been following, you know, your socials for, you know, Dave Dot, and you've always been the ripper from Brazil, leading the charge. Yeah. Like everyone, a lot of Australians here talk about your social media clips. So keep pumping them out, and I'm looking forward to some more downwind clips when you get those 3 months or 3 weeks up the coast. Because
I think my phone will release a video about, because I have documented everything. We did the GoPros, we did the drones, we did a lot. So I sent them all the footage. They were super busy, they couldn't edit yet.
Yeah.
But that will be a small documentary about this trip. So it's gonna be awesome. I will be sharing for sure.
I'm excited to see. Stay tuned, people. Some more content. Epic.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Mizo. We'll be in touch. If you ever come to Australia, you let me know. And same for if I'm coming to Brazil.
I have a dream of going to Australia. So pretty soon I will be dropping there. We're going to be sharing some waves together for sure.
Can't wait. All right. That's it, mate.